Hey, you are listening to The Workplace Leader. This is the podcast where we go behind the scenes of corporate real estate, talking to industry experts about how they shape the next generation workplace.
I'm your host, Sabine M. And in today's episode, you'll hear a webinar that I've been hosting together with my colleague, Lauren Dreyfus. Lauren is our trend scout and research analyst at Locati.
Well, okay, let's get started. This is the first time we're doing this kind of format, and my colleague Lauren is joining me for this session. And it's more of an explanatory, explorative session around the trending work concepts that are discussed in the world, in the media, in our industry. Maybe a word about Lauren and me. At first, maybe we planned this session with the idea in mind that Lauren would be in California working from there, but plans have changed and we are, well, truly flexible. And now we're actually both in Zurich, but in different locations. We'll go into that a little bit more later. I work with Lauren every day. We're together in the Locati research team, and she has written part one and also the following parts of the Definitive Guide to Workplace Analytics that we have provided as a handout here. But Lauren, maybe you share a bit more about yourself.
Okay, so about me on the Locati team, trend scout and research analyst. So I will end up doing a lot of reading about what's going on in the workplace, especially right now with the hybrid work evolution, and just understanding what changes are happening and trying to come up with a way of explaining that to everyone that reads our content. So that's why I'm the one that ended up writing about the workplace. And yeah, let's go over the buzzwords that we discovered along this journey. I mean, as we're all discovering it together. But yeah, I end up reading a lot about the workplace and then doing a lot of writing to help others understand it as well.
Yeah. And also us and our extended team understand what's moving the industry also. Don't know if I should say too much about me. Well, thought leadership and research manager for Locati. In that capacity, I'm hosting the Workplace Leader podcast on a weekly basis. And yeah, well, otherwise looking into the kind of research and content creation we are doing to support the industry. And now, so that it's not just introduction from us, we thought it would be nice to hear from you all, actually. What would be your favorite place to work from in the world? If you could choose, it could be anything. And while you think about it, and maybe type that in the chat, Lauren, what would be your dream workplace to work from? Is it California?
Yeah, I think it would be hard for me to decide on just one place to work. And then I would probably have to go to a bunch of different places to see, is the internet connection really good? And is it really comfortable to work there? Or would I be really distracted somehow? So yeah, I was looking up Seychelles. I don't know if it would be difficult to work there, but California would definitely be nice work. And then when you close the laptop, there's plenty to do after work.
Switzerland close to a lake in the mountains is a good idea. Yes, mm-hmm. I agree with that. And I have done that. I've worked at the lake before. And I would have said for me, maybe any place in the south of Italy. I've done that last year, if you remember, Lauren. But I have to admit the internet connection, because it was kind of remote, was rather bad. So some things I could not, like, I think uploading files was just not possible. Download was, uploading was not.
So you really have to like test, you know, a couple different places.
Yeah, you're right. And find like your, and I mean, that's what flexible supposed to support, right? To do these kind of things. We're still curious if anybody else has other suggestions that we should try, but we're going to go right into the matter. As I've said, Lauren's not in California. She is in, well, not exactly in Zurich, but in the greater Zurich area. Let's say that I'm in our Zurich office, which I do think would make us, for the time being, a distributed team. Is that correct, Lauren?
So we would be, okay, the difference between distributed and co-location is which office are you assigned to? We are assigned to the same office. So we are co-located, whether or not we're both in the same place, we're both assigned to the Zurich office. So we are not distributed.
We're not a distributed team. Okay. That means also if you were in California now, we'd still be co-located. Just to get that straight. Okay.
And I was thinking about it from a, okay, if one of us was temporarily working out of the New York office.
Yes. We'd still be co-located.
Permanently co-located, but maybe temporarily distributed.
Okay. But then we're always distributed with our colleagues in New York.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Singapore.
Good. So squared that down, we are actually not distributed. Okay. As you see, I get confused by the term still as well. And I think actually a lot of the coverage is, yeah, people are using it the way they like. Also, when we come, ooh, these are two interesting concepts. And I think distributed teams, especially if it's across different time zones, oftentimes comes with or actually requires asynchronous work.
Yeah, that was the plan for us. If I was going to be in California, I think we would have one or 2 hours that were going to be synchronous, and then the rest was going to be asynchronous because we just would like to stay in our own time zone. That's good for our experience, our well-being, our sleep habits. But asynchronous is that you do not have to work on the same exact time. The downside of that is that you can't necessarily just call someone up or just meet someone impromptu, because maybe you guys are not awake at the same time, or maybe you just don't have the same work hours.
Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily require for us to be in different time zones. So if for personal reasons, I know one of our colleagues does that, actually goes cycling during the afternoon and therefore adds an hour or two in the evening, that would lead to a partial asynchronous situation, even though we're all in Switzerland.
And then the traditional way is that just everyone is synchronous. Everybody's working the same time, goes into the same office, 9 to 5. And so it's about just being liberated from that.
Which kind of is a part of flexible, because flexible can be either time or location, I'm assuming, but I'm jumping ahead of things. Yeah. I know autonomous work, and I'm quite happy this time I pronounce it correctly, I hope, is an important element to asynchronous work.
So, I mean, it's good that we put both of these together because the words are so similar. They're spelled similarly. Asynchronous is about the time when you work. Autonomous is about, do you have the decision-making power to decide what projects you work on, what tasks you work on? Yeah, so it would help if you are asynchronous permanently, that there's some element of deciding what you work on and when. So it's definitely a spectrum. So I'm sure there are many people who can fully decide their own projects. And some people, it's just within this time frame, you decide in what order you work on things.
I think it's probably part of work transformation as well, that we've moved away from prior clear assignment of tasks stemming still from the industrial area to more autonomy in what projects or what tasks to pursue, or within given targets, which initiatives to implement. And I think these degrees are reflected in this pyramid.
Yeah. So at the bottom, it's saying you're really not asynchronous at all. It's going back to the traditional, in this office, everyone on this team is working the same hours, 9 to 5. And it's literally a job that cannot be done any other way. You have to physically be there. Then there's different grades of moving up to the top, which this pyramid ended up calling Nirvana, which is you have better performance than those who work in the traditional way. You don't even have to be at the office, and you don't even have to work on the same schedule to still get work done and be very productive.
Don't worry if that's too small. It is in the part one guide that you can download either from here or from our website as well, if you haven't already. Ooh, I think these might be my favorite terms because I think there is a lot of confusion around them and they're used interchangeably. Currently, I would assume, Lauren, you are working remote from me, kind of. And as I'm in the office, it would constitute our situation as a hybrid work situation. But before you reveal what's true, I think we actually wanted to do a little poll and ask you all, what is your company's work model? What do you think? Is it hybrid work, remote work, or flexible work? You should have seen the poll now in the chat. And I think if you click on it, it will open and you can give us your vote. That would be awesome. And I do think you see the poll results live as well, because it's switching back and forth a little. Okay. We have a high percentage, 87%. It's not moving anymore. 87.5% saying they're in a hybrid work situation. 12.5% voting for flexible. So Lauren, what now is the difference between these three terms?
So we definitely represent all three of these terms, because right now I'm not in the office. I'm working remotely. We, within our company, have, I said, flexible work, because we have hybrid work, but then we also have fully remote. So we have a couple different options of flexible work, but basically hybrid work and remote work are different types of flexible work. And the flexible work is the one that's up here. And there's just a lot of variations of flexible work. And it's all about whatever is a deviation from the traditional in office 9 to 5, everybody working synchronously, whatever is a deviation from that, that kind of makes the employee's life easier in a way. It's flexible so that employees' work schedule works with their life, then it's flexible work. So hybrid work is a type of flexible work and remote work is a type of flexible work.
Yeah. Flexible work is the umbrella term.
Yeah.
You say that. Okay. But then hybrid comes in many forms. Oh, well, only in three forms, according to this graph.
This is really helpful to find, because it kind of broke down that there's more than one way to do hybrid work. Option A is that permanently there are some employees that work in the office, and permanently there are some employees that work remotely, and they always do that. They don't switch. Then there's B, where all employees have some time in the office and then some time remotely. And that could be scheduled, or it could just be up to them. And then option C is a combination of A and B, where some people permanently do some form of work, work in one location permanently, and then some people are switching back and forth. Okay. So that was a really helpful chart in breaking down that there are a couple of ways of doing hybrid just within one company.
Oh, so this is one company and they can have all these variations. I was thinking this is different corporations. That's interesting.
They can decide to choose between A, B, or C, and then different corporations. I mean, this corporation can be doing A, this one could be doing B, this one could be doing C, but it's within one corporation. They can decide, do we want to do A, B, or C? Like, what works for us?
Okay, sorting it again. Hybrid is a type of flexible work, but there are other types of flexible work that you have put on here. Can you highlight some of these?
Yeah. So since we talk about hybrid work, I mean, we think this is the umbrella term, but the umbrella term is flexible work because it's more than just hybrid. It's more than just whether or not you work from home or whether you work from the office. It's also, do you have a part-time schedule? Do you schedule your work hours around your life or your school, your caregiving schedule? It's flexible work is job sharing, so that, again, your life circumstance just requires that you be able to share your job with someone else because you won't be able to work full time. And then time off in lieu is instead of paying you for your overtime, you are given time off. So there's different ways of flexible working.
I'm glad you picked that one, because I would have had questions about it and I don't think I would have said it the correct way. But there's a couple more that I find really interesting. So self-rostering, what does that mean? Because I'm thinking of a chicken on a
beam. Like the rooster.
Yes. No, yeah, I'm the chicken that's turning when I heard self-rostering.
Yeah, it's like a funny term, but it means that employees kind of put up the hours that they want to work, and then management will take those preferences.
Interesting. So that would be
deciding.
what you mentioned, if you decide opposed to your employer deciding the work hours.
Yeah, which feels a lot less flexible because they don't know what's going on in your life and what could be the easiest, most productive schedule for you. So if you self-roster, self-schedule, then it's maybe the best of both worlds for everybody.
And then what also caught my eye is, what's the difference between, you sort of said it, staggered hours and annualized hours?
Let me just start with annualized hours. It's annualized hours is saying that you have to work X number of hours within a year, and then however you do that is up to you. Staggered hours, I think this one will be hard for me to explain, but I'm thinking it's like not the same every day, but I have to review that one.
Oh, so it's like stacking up hours, kind of.
I can't remember if it's staggering between you and like your manager that you're not exactly on the same schedule, or if it's only within your own schedule that your hours are just kind of different from day to day. It could be that you start maybe in the morning and then you in the mid, kind of like you mentioned, one of our colleagues, you don't work middle of the day, but then you come back in the evening.
Well, and then to be honest, I don't think that companies are using these terms really that much.
Right.
I haven't come across in like company communication about these things. Yeah.
They okay. Yeah, part-time and the time off in lieu. And
I think I wanted to check in now with our audience and ask them, were you right before with the definition of your company's work model? And it's a simple yes or no vote, because I noticed that the poll results have changed. So either people added votes or they changed their votes. Okay, so we either have one very honest person or all were wrong. Okay, it's moving again. Lauren, do you see the poll results as well? Because otherwise I'd quiz you if you think people were yes or no. Okay, you see it.
I'm looking.
Yeah, you're not trying to be super smart and trying to. Okay, so 66% said they were
change the old poll now.
Yeah, exactly. They said they were right, but change the old poll. Okay, that's not how it's supposed to work. Also, it wasn't really important if you were right or not. We just wanted to get a little pulse check. So 70% said they were right. But I mean, if you click flexible work, you would have been right, even if you were in remote or in hybrid situation, because we learned that's the umbrella term. So always say flexible work, you'll be right. Okay, so work from home, fully remote and virtual first. And I think virtual first, I always explain wrongly, so I'm not even going to attempt. So work from home, I think, has been, prior to the pandemic, it's been not the norm, let's say that. It would occasionally be allowed to do a day per week from home. And it was the same here. We did a day per week from home here as well. And also then in emergency situations, you could do that as well. But it has been the fallback option during the pandemic. And that's why it's often cited as the biggest homework experiment ever. Although I think the first homework experiments happened already in 1992, which is like 30 years ago. And then fully remote is something that has not been on the radar of corporations, except maybe for a couple of tech companies who were like, anyways, having a big tech stack. And that was suiting with their corporate culture and their corporate mission. And then, as I said, I'm not going to go into virtual first, because I know the last time we talked about it, I explained it very wrongly, because I thought virtual first was the rule that if there is a hybrid meeting, everybody needs to have a tile, but I think I'm completely wrong on it. So Lauren, why don't you take it from here?
Okay, so I'll just say that all of them are a form of remote. Just like hybrid working, there's different ways to do remote working. Work from home is obvious. It just says it within itself, but it just means that there is an office you can go to work. Fully remote, there is no office for you to go to work. You are supposed to be doing all your work from your own location. And then virtual first is that there is an office, but it is not meant for your individual work. It's for collaboration. And so virtual first means that we are first going to have everyone working virtually outside of the office somewhere, but then the secondary work location is the office. So I guess it's going to depend on the company whether they decide if you can work there secondarily, or if it's really strictly only for meetings, only for collaboration.
So would it be something like, I saw Dropbox opening their first, I think they call it studios, Dropbox studios, where people can come occasionally for certain workshops or activities, but normally they are now remote workers, so virtual first. Is that it?
Yeah, they definitely are virtual first. It's no longer that we are being office first or office centric. We are allowing people to work from home. And it's sometimes, I mean, a benefit for companies to do that and then just focus their office space on collaboration and that they don't need as much office space.
I will now remember that forever until you can take me by my word. Ask me in a month if I still remember what virtual first is. And then we'll see. Another interesting one is mobility, because I think there is different mobility definitions looking at individual, but also team mobility, and then looking at mobility within the office space and looking at a variety of workplace settings. So I would actually claim that the both of us, we're both mobile, but in different ways, because you're like working today at home and at another day you might come to the office, and maybe during their day you've been mobile, had a walking meeting or something like that. And I've changed settings within the office. So I started working at a desk. I've been in the meeting room behind me. Now I'm in this room, been in the workshop area. So I had internal mobility within the office. And then I think my mobility with all the other team members aggregated would draw a picture of our team mobility of the workplaces or work settings we like to use. Okay, I see a nod. That's already.
Yeah, I think individual and team mobility overlap a lot. And then the team aspect that is just like a little bit extra is really like, does team A work a lot with team B or team C and D? And then where do they tend to work? But yeah, mobility is, and then I really love the way that I finally was able to break this down for the guide, which is it's the remote policies. Are you allowed to work from home or outside of the office or outside of the country? So it's policies with HR, but then it's also with IT. Did they create the ability for you to work anywhere that you want in the office? So you can change those different work settings within the office, but then you can also work from home or from a different country, from a co-working space. So it's the policy that allows you to go, and then the actual ability for you to connect with colleagues, meet, be productive, have access to all your digital tools, everything that connects you. So you kind of, you need both of those things in place to be highly mobile. Mobility will, it'll help you identify the type of space that you need within the office. So once you kind of track all that data, then you can look at your office and say, okay, what kind of spaces do we really need? What's in really high demand? What's low demand? What's overutilized? What's underutilized?
So mobility has a subset of requirements. And I guess office design needs to follow new work modes as well. And I think most of the concepts we're going into now are not really new, but they had not been adopted widely before either. But flexible working makes it necessary now to look at office capacity and necessary seating demand in a different way. So that's why these concepts are resurfacing. And I think that's why desk sharing is becoming a bigger question, because, yeah, well, previously there's been often resistance towards giving up your desk. But now that you're using the desk at home and want to have that flexibility, I think there's more of an understanding that then the company cannot provide a seat for every person. And I think some forms of desk sharing are hoteling and hot desking. And again, those are two terms that I always misuse. But I know, Lauren, you know what's right, and you have that great analogy to remember it by.
Yeah, I think before this hybrid work evolution, we all use them interchangeably. But now that we're really working this way, it's good to know the differences. Hoteling is desk sharing in a way that feels like checking into a hotel. You're going to stay for a while. And so it's those people who will reserve their desk and they'll be working at that same desk for a week or a month at a time. It's not like hot desking, which is more like a restaurant where it changes hourly. It's only just quickly as long as you need it and then you move on. And this will change every day. Like no one will start to feel like that's my desk with hot desking because it changes so often. But hoteling, you can start to get that feeling like I'm the one that reserves that all the time and I start to feel like that's my desk. So yeah, that's the difference between the two. One is hotel-like and one is restaurant-like.
Because you're spending fewer hours there. Yeah. Okay, I should have been able to remember this because it's in the name, right? Hoteling.
Yeah, one will give it away.
Yeah, although I think these are kind of concepts that are not used that much anymore. I remember like 12 years ago. Is that accurate? Yeah, probably 10 years ago. It's been big and I always found it especially big with, I think it was like either sales departments with people who were like a lot on the road meeting clients or also sometimes in consultancies, again, where naturally people would be a lot at the client side and not really in the office. Yeah. What I remember like very vividly is actually that in this situation, people, because they didn't have their own desk opposed to others, they had a trolley, which was kind of big. And then this huge, because you didn't have, maybe it's a German thing that you have this thing underneath the desk with all the drawers where you can put your private stuff. Maybe it's not a German thing. I think it's a common thing. I just don't know what it's called in English. But they then had these huge trolleys where all their stuff was in when they were there. And then these trolleys needed to have a garage. So that was actually consuming quite a lot of space. And I mean, when I say garage, it was like basically a table where you could put it underneath. But it was actually the ones that I saw, it was like very central within the floor areas, which at the time I found a bit weird and not too visually appealing. I wonder really now looking at today, how much stuff people still have in the office and need. Right. I mean, we have a small locker, right? I never go to the locker. I don't even remember.
I have my few things in there and then I would always forget what I have in there.
I had a couple of books in there and actually like a tennis ball for if I got a back pain and needed to release that. That's in there as well. And that's it.
A swim gear in there.
Ah, true. No, I've always brought that. Yes. But yeah, that's so I'm really wondering how much are people's, I mean, because after 2 years in the pandemic, how much stuff could you still need to drag around with you besides the laptop? Are you still working with a lot of paper? Because at home, I didn't have a printer. I rarely needed it. So it's really interesting how that's going to play out in office design concepts, especially when we look at, and we've been quickly on that site before, activity-based working. And how that relates to assigned and unassigned seating. So both hoteling and hot desking are unassigned seating models. And I think activity-based working predominantly comes with unassigned seating as well, because that's kind of the name of the game and where you have the benefits for the corporation as well, that you can actually save on providing desk space, especially looking now at the notion that we're thinking focus work can happen at home or other spaces where people feel they can actually focus opposed to coming to the office for the buzz and the social connections.
Activity-based work, like you said, it's largely connects with unassigned seating because it's all about promoting different ways of working. But even if you have an assigned seat, it could be about an area that's created so that you could take a break from that individual focus work so that you can kind of be in a casual environment, grab coffee, water cooler, cafe style. But then there's other places that are supposed to be highly interactive collaboration rooms, meeting rooms where it's all set up with everything that you need to connect to someone who's working remotely or to a client that's located somewhere else. But then there's impromptu meeting areas where you don't have to book it in advance. You could just walk up on it if it's free and have a impromptu meeting, phone booths. But it's all about thinking of different ways that people work and looking at your company in particular and really studying like how are your employees the most productive and what are they looking for? What makes them the most productive? And then just like creating a space that promotes that and then having a diverse amount of spaces, because inevitably your entire group of employees are going to like working in different ways. Some people are going to like quiet for the most part, and then others are going to like that chatter and ability to talk to other people and build ideas off of each other. So it's about having like a diverse mix of those different types of activities.
And possibly providing something that you don't have at home, like similar to why people go to a restaurant. It's like you can cook at home, but you still opt to dine out or lunch out for either the great food or the experience of the nice interior or for being out with your friends, having a nice glass of wine. Not suggesting that that is what you should do in the office, but you can. I mean, we saw that actually, funny enough, in our own office utilization data for our team, that team utilization was highest on the days where we, like if you look at weekdays, on the days where we had our after work drinks, surprise. So it still does work. What I found interesting with activity-based working, so I said before, not a new concept, at least around for a decade or two, but it's even older than that. I think it stems from the 60s already.
Yeah, when they were trying to make the office like Mad Men, kind of hip and social.
Do you think Mad Men is a hip office?
It was.
It was. I mean, the fashion was fresh and hip. It's like, okay.
And then, I mean, I read an article that was saying, as we try to draw people back to the office, what are some different ideas? And some people are really thinking, well, what if we do kind of like event space? And it's really a clubhouse. That was the title of that article. Is, do you want to make it like a clubhouse? It's all about socializing.
And no work.
I think it just depends on the company and the work that they have to do.
Yeah, I think I've read someone doing that as well. I don't remember who it was. I mean, again, it's similar to the studio concept. Although the studio, if you're virtual first and come into work, I think that was still kind of a work thing. But then the clubhouse, would you have that permanently or would you just like book it for events?
I mean, I took it away as they were going to do virtual first and the office was going to be like the clubhouse.
But it would always be there too as a resource to go to.
Yeah. But not for quiet, focused work.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be possible.
Yeah. That's the point about it, that activity-based, although it's like an super old concept, the activities that are supposed to be supported have spread out. Lately, one aspect that someone mentioned to me was as well, like wellness as well, providing actually wellness spaces. And the young mother said, well, she enjoys the time not being at home, actually being free of childcare duties and taking the time to take care of herself in the office as the opportunities were given there, which is a nice thing when you think about employee mental health. And funnily enough, the office in that way, balancing out the stresses from the private life somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one furniture company, can't think of their name right now, but did a report and then they broke down the different personas of people who are liking the work from home, those who do not like it, and they broke down the reasons why. And anybody who had childcare or maybe they were taking care of elderly parents or something like that, they wanted some kind of break so that they could focus on work and they wanted to go back to the office.
I mean, there's always varieties, and it would be a lie if we told you now we know what the future is going to hold, but we're trying. So that's a nice segue actually into, we have 5 or 6 minutes left for questions. So either drop us a line if you have a question, or we're also still curious about suggestions for where to work from. What would be the ideal or the dream space to go to?
And Kayak has a report on what they think the dream spaces are.
I've seen that. I think Portugal was top of the list, right? But why?
I think it was good infrastructure. And
I don't think that would be my number one reason to go somewhere. I mean, for good infrastructure, you could stay in Switzerland.
I mean,
I
then,
guess
then you go to the chalet.
I guess maybe prices played a role as well. Probably it was a matrix
right
scoring of things. Anyways, I mean, if there are no questions, we're not going to keep you any longer. Thank you for joining us tonight. Stay tuned for part two of our workplace guide. Actually, you can get it already on our webpage. And Lauren, maybe better you than me, what's in part two?
So part two of the guide will go over the different things that you need to do workplace analytics at the best level, at the highest level you possibly can. So part one was just all about going over the concepts, what we talked about right now, just understanding what's happening in the evolution. Now, how do you go about measuring that and just breaking down the major concepts that you need to understand in order to measure your workplace?
Yes. So that's already available as a PDF for download. If you want that in a webinar format as well, let us know. We can possibly make that happen. Otherwise, have a lovely evening or a good day if you dialed in from somewhere else in the world. And take care. And thank you, Lauren.
Thanks for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of The Workplace Leader, there's more. Go visit our blog and have a look at some of the other topics we have covered. We've just released the Definitive Guide to Workplace Analytics, for instance. Or tune into our next episode of The Workplace Leader.